All right, so today we're diving deep into ancient Athens with Plato's Credo.
Ooh, Credo. That's a good one.
It really is, and I'm sure everyone listening remembers the basic setup. Socrates, sentenced to death for corrupting the youth of Athens, just sitting in prison waiting for, the inevitable. But here's where things get really, really interesting. A wealthy friend of his named Credo shows up with an escape plan.
Oh, this is gonna be good.
Yeah, it's a real nail biter. The question is, will Socrates, a man who, always championed reason and justice, is he actually going to break the law to save his own life?
Yeah, it's a powerful dilemma for sure. It makes you think about what's more important, staying true to your principles or just trying to survive.
Right. And the setting just adds to all the drama. We're literally on death row with
Not
Socrates.
kidding.
So Credo arrives, and let me tell you, he is not messing around. He's already bribed the guards. He's found safe passage to Thessaly, and he's even got other friends like Simmias and Cebes ready to help.
So he's like, let's get out of here.
Exactly. But it's interesting, though, Credo isn't just concerned about Socrates.
Oh, what do you mean?
Well, he's also worried about his own reputation. He even says that people will think he's cheap if he doesn't save his friend.
That makes you wonder, is he really doing this for Socrates or is it more about himself?
Right. That's a good question. But anyway, Credo lays out all his arguments, and they're pretty compelling at first.
Like what?
Well, he talks about how Socrates' death would just devastate his family and friends. It's like, think about your children, Socrates. Don't you have a duty to raise them?
Playing the family card.
Yeah. And then he even dismisses the opinions of, like, the average Athenian.
What does he say?
He argues that only the views of wise men like Socrates actually matter. It's like he's trying to butter him up a bit.
A little flattery never hurts, right?
But he also plays the practical card, too. He's like, look, escaping is easy. We've got the money, we've got the connections. It'll be a piece of cake. He even mentions that other friends are willing to chip in financially, so it won't even be a burden on him.
So he's really appealing to both Socrates' heart and his head, hoping one of those arguments will stick.
So it's a pretty good pitch. I mean, who wouldn't want to escape certain death? But here's the thing. Socrates isn't buying it.
He's not.
Nope. He responds with this incredible calmness, almost like he's accepting his fate. And get this, he even tells Credo about a dream he had.
My dream.
Yeah, a woman dressed in white appeared to him and told him, "The third day hence to Phthia shalt thou go."
And what does that mean?
Well, Socrates sees it as a sign that his death is basically preordained, almost like it's meant to be.
So he's using this dream to justify staying put. Like it's not even his choice anymore.
Maybe, but I think it also reveals something much deeper about Socrates and his whole philosophy.
What do you mean?
He seems to believe in this higher purpose, some kind of cosmic order that goes beyond our own individual desires. It's like he's saying there's a bigger plan here, and who am I to mess with it?
I see. So even though he's facing death, he finds peace in surrendering to this higher power.
Exactly. And this is where we really start to see the clash between Crito's worldly concerns and Socrates' unwavering commitment to justice.
Because for Socrates, escaping wouldn't just be breaking the law, it would be violating his own principles.
Absolutely. He believes that a life lived unjustly isn't worth living. He even compares himself to an athlete who ignores his trainer's advice and listens to the crowd instead.
Oh, I get it. Just like that athlete would damage his body, Socrates is saying that he'd be harming his soul, that part of him that strives for justice by escaping unjustly.
You got it. So for him, preserving his soul is more important than preserving his life. He'd rather die a just man than live as a hypocrite.
Wow, that's a powerful statement. It really makes you think, what's more important, our physical survival or living in accordance with our values? What are we willing to sacrifice for our principles?
It's heavy stuff, and it's about to get even more intense because Socrates takes the conversation in a totally different direction.
How so?
He introduces this imagined conversation with the personified laws of Athens, like he's having a debate with the concept of law itself.
Whoa, that's interesting. He's giving a voice to this abstract idea and exploring, the relationship between the individual and the state. We call this the social contract now.
Exactly. So walk us through, what do the laws say to Socrates?
Well, they basically accuse him of breaking a deal. They're like, hey, you've lived in Athens for 70 years. You benefited from our protection and our system. You could have left if you didn't like it, but you chose to stay. So now you have to play by the rules, even if you don't agree with this one.
So they're laying down the law, literally. They're saying, you made a commitment, Socrates, you can't just back out now because things got tough.
And to really make their point, they use these strong analogies.
Oh.
They compare Socrates escaping to a child disobeying his parents or a slave running away from his master.
Okay, those comparisons seem a little extreme.
I know, right? But you have to think about it in the context of ancient Athens. The city-state was everything. It was their family, their teacher, their protector Socrates felt this really profound sense of duty and obligation to it, almost like it was a part of him.
So breaking the law wasn't just a legal issue for him. It was like betraying his own family.
Exactly. And the laws don't stop there. They also accuse Socrates of hypocrisy, saying that if he escapes, he'll be undermining his own teachings about virtue and justice. They even warn him that it'll make him an enemy of all well-governed states.
Wow, talk about guilt tripping. So they're saying, if you run, you're not just a lawbreaker. You're a traitor to your own values and a threat to society itself.
That's a powerful argument, and it really highlights the tension between, you know, individual conscience and what the state demands. So here's the question for you. Is Socrates right to put his principles above his own life and the pleas of his friends?
That's a tough one. I mean, it's admirable that he's sticking to his beliefs, but on the other hand, is it really worth dying for?
And that's the genius of Crato. It doesn't give us any easy answers. It just makes us grapple with these moral dilemmas and think about what we would do in Socrates' sandals.
Yeah, it's like holding a mirror up to our own values and asking, what would you do?
Mm.
So we're left with Socrates right in this impossible situation. Crato's begging him to escape the laws of Athens, or basically laying down the guilt trip, and his own belief in justice is telling him to stay put. It's like this battle between his head and his heart.
Yeah, totally. And it's important to remember that Socrates isn't, you know, this cold, unfeeling robot. He actually acknowledges the pain his death will cause his friends and his family. He even tells Crato, I shall not only lose a friend who can never be replaced, but there is another evil. People who do not know you and me will believe that I might have saved you if I had been willing to give money, but that I did not care.
So he gets it. He understands the real consequences of his choice, both for himself and for the people he loves. It's not like he's just brushing off their feelings or anything.
Right, but for Socrates, those personal feelings, even ones like love and loyalty, and they can't outweigh this principle of justice. It's like he's saying, my life's important, sure, and my friends are dear to me, but justice is the foundation of a good society. It has to come first.
It's a tough stance to take, I get that. But I can see how he arrives at it. He's basically saying that if he compromises his principles, even to save his own life, he's chipping away at the very idea of justice.
Exactly. And that leads us to another important point. Socrates isn't just thinking about what's right or wrong in this specific case. He's thinking about the bigger picture, the long-term impact of his actions.
You mean like setting a precedent? Like if he breaks the law, even if it's for a seemingly good reason, what's to stop everyone else from doing the same thing?
Exactly. It's a slippery slope argument, right? But it definitely carries a lot of weight.
So for him, upholding the law, even a law that seems unjust, is ultimately about keeping order and stability in society.
Yeah, and it ties back to that social contract idea we were talking about earlier. Remember, Socrates believes that by living in Athens and benefiting from its laws, he essentially made a deal to follow them, even when they don't work out in his favor.
So it's about honoring his commitment, even if it costs him everything.
Right. He's basically saying that real integrity means upholding your end of the bargain no matter what, even when it's hard or even dangerous.
Okay, so he's made up his mind. He's staying in prison and accepting his fate. But there's another layer to this that I find so fascinating. What about his friends, those guys who were so desperate to help him escape, Simmias and Cibades? They weren't just offering money. They really cared about him, right?
Yeah, definitely. And they represent a completely different viewpoint on Socrates' dilemma. They argue that he actually has a duty to continue his philosophical work, that his life is valuable beyond just his own personal principles.
So it's not just about escaping death. It's about protecting this voice that could benefit so many others. It's like they're accusing him of intellectual suicide.
Yeah, in a way they are. They're saying, Socrates, the world needs your wisdom. Don't throw it all away for some abstract idea of justice.
It's a powerful counterargument. I think a lot of people today would agree. We admire people who stand up for what they believe in, but it's hard not to feel like the world loses something precious when a brilliant mind is silenced.
Totally. It's interesting to see how Socrates responds to this, though. He acknowledges their concern, but he still maintains that his main duty is to live a just life, even if it means giving up his philosophical mission.
So he's picking integrity over impact. He'd rather be a good man than a famous philosopher.
I think that's a pretty fair interpretation. He believes that true wisdom isn't just about teaching others. It's about living a life that reflects virtue and justice. He's saying that his actions speak louder than words.
Okay, so he's willing to be a martyr for his beliefs.
Hmm.
But is that really the best way to make a difference? Couldn't he have done more good if he stayed alive and continued teaching?
That's the big question, isn't it? And there's no easy answer. But Socrates believes that even in death, he can make a statement about the importance of living a just life. He's hoping that by being willing to die for his principles, he can inspire others to live their lives with more purpose and conviction.
So he's making his death into one final lesson, a testament to the power of living a principled life.
Exactly. And it's a lesson that has resonated throughout history. Socrates' story keeps pushing us to examine our own values and to ask ourselves what we would be willing to sacrifice for justice.
It's a heavy question to think about. So Socrates has made his decision. He's going to stay. And the countdown to his execution begins. What happens next? How does he spend those final days? Does he give in to despair, or does he find a kind of peace? And what does his death ultimately mean for Athens and for the world? So he's made his choice, right? He's going to stay and face his death. But how does he handle those final days? You know, is he filled with regret, or does he find some kind of peace?
Well, luckily we have another one of Plato's dialogues to give us some insight. Theodoret actually recounts Socrates' last hours, and what we see is that he faces death with the same, you know, serenity and intellectual curiosity that he lived his life with.
Really? So even facing execution, he's still the Socrates we all know, engaging in these deep philosophical discussions and pushing everyone around him to think critically.
Yep. And it's here that the story takes on this whole other level. We move beyond the legal and moral arguments from Crito, and we get into the spiritual, the existential, you know.
So what are they talking about in these final conversations? What's on Socrates' mind as he's getting ready to drink the hemlock?
Well, Phaedo is pretty complex, but one of the main themes that runs through it is this idea of the immortality of the soul.
The soul living on forever.
Yeah, Socrates argues that the soul is eternal, that it existed before we were born, and will continue to exist after we die.
So he wasn't afraid of dying because he believed that a part of him would carry on.
I think it's even more than that. He sees death as a kind of liberation, you know, a release from the limitations of the physical body.
Interesting.
He believes that when we die, the soul can finally achieve true knowledge and wisdom without all the distractions of the material world.
Wow, that's a pretty radical concept. So he's not just okay with dying, he's almost looking forward to it like it's a gateway to some higher state of being.
Yeah, and this idea, you know, it's been echoed by different philosophical and religious traditions throughout history.
I can see that. But even if you don't subscribe to the whole immortal soul idea, there's something so powerful about Socrates' courage in the face of death. He doesn't beg for mercy. He doesn't become bitter. He just accepts his fate with this incredible dignity and even humor.
Right. And I think that's a big part of why he's such a lasting figure. He shows us that it's possible to deal with even the toughest challenges with grace and, you know, intellectual integrity.
And it makes you think about some really deep questions too, like, what does it mean to have a good death? How do we come to terms with our own mortality? What does it mean to live a truly meaningful life?
And Crito and Phaedo, they don't hand us easy answers, but they do give us a way to think through these really tough questions.
It's like Socrates is still challenging us even thousands of years later to really look at what we believe and to live our lives with purpose.
Absolutely. And that brings us back to the core of what we've been exploring in this deep dive, Crito. It's not just some old text. It's a timeless story about what it means to be human. It forces us to confront that tension between what our conscience tells us and what society demands, the desire to survive versus the call to live by higher principles.
And it reminds us that true justice isn't just about following the rules. It's about living a life that's aligned with our values, even when it's hard. Even when it puts us at risk, even when it means facing death.
Socrates' story is just so powerful. It speaks to the strength of integrity, the courage to stand up for your beliefs, and the possibility of finding meaning even when we're confronted with our own mortality.
So as we wrap up, think about Socrates. Ask yourself, what would he do? What are the principles you're willing to fight for? How can you live a life that reflects your values, a life that's worth remembering? Because in the end, isn't a life lived justly, even a short one, a life that was truly well lived?